So this evening we're reading from Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, entitled Pure Devotional Service, text number 19. Shvavid vara hostara karai shtamshtuta purusha pashu nayat kana patha peto jhatu nama gadhagja. A famous verse. Translation. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from all evil. Purport. The general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life in spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have particularly been put on the level of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education particularly prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing a so-called education, the so-called educated person moves like dogs from door to door for applications for some service, and mostly they're driven away, informed of no vacancy. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves a master faithfully with a sufficient reward. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuff and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to the hogs. Hogs are very much attracted to eating stool. So stool is a kind of foodstuff for a particular type of animal. And even stones are edibles for a particular type of animal or bird. But the human being is not meant for eating everything and anything. He is meant to eat grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. For chewing solid food, the human being has a particular type of teeth meant for cutting fruits and vegetables. The human being is endowed with two canine teeth as a concession. For persons who will eat animal food at any cost. It is known to everyone that one man's food is another man's poison. Human beings are expected to accept the remnants of food offered to Lord Sri Krishna, and the Lord accepts foodstuff from the category of leaves, flowers, fruits, etc. As prescribed by Vedic scriptures, no animal food is offered to the Lord. Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. He should not imitate the animals to derive so-called vitamin values. Therefore, a person who has no discrimination in regard to eating is compared to a hog. Well, I asked Chaturatma Prabhu to select a verse for me, and I don't know what's going on here. I mean, something from the 10th canto or something? Gosh. So in this verse of...
I'm not the one in orange.
In this verse of Bhagavatam, Shukdev Goswami, he's using very strong language to condemn materialistic men and women. Actually, he's not condemning them, but they're already condemned by their karmic actions in this world. Actually, as a sadhu, he's speaking strongly. Sadhu means one who cuts with his words. This is sadhu. He may look very genteel. He may have a little twinkle in his eye and so forth and so on. But when he opens his mouth, watch out. Sometimes Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, they used to complain, not to him, but amongst each other, that Guru Maharaj is always using the chopping technique. Chop, chop, chop. He was very heavy. I've heard that actually he was more, he was chastising his disciples more than he was giving his blessings. Of course, chastisement is in and of itself also a type of blessing, but he was very strong. So sadhus are very compassionate, because we're very attached to this world. Despite the fact that we're suffering, we remain attached. This is the irony of material life. We complain day and night about our problems. But are we willing to let the source of those problems go? Our independence from Krishna? No. We want to keep our independence and suffer. happily. So he's pointing out, and yes, sometimes you have to use the hard words. This is called argumentum ad baculum. In diplomacy, there's four types of reasoning. First one is that someone's, you know, disagreeable with you, so like a minister. Then you offer him sweet words of praise in public. If that doesn't work, you give him an expensive gift. I hope he shuts up. But if he's very ambitious, that won't work either. So you give him post. You make him vice president. But you don't give very many powers to the vice presidential position. This is all diplomacy. But argument ad baculum, if worse comes to worse, you use danda. You use stick, you use force. So this is actually a manifestation of Shukadeva Goswami's compassion, that he's calling some people Shva Vidvaraha Ushtarakarai. It even sounds bad. You Shva Vidvaraha Ushtarakarai. Remember in Gurukul, in New Mayapur, our children never, very rarely, if ever, went outside the community. We were in the country, a very beautiful setting. Under loa, avance, Lucy Lamal. An idyllic type of situation for the Gurukul. So they never, you know, there wasn't internet in those days, so they couldn't surf the internet and crash on the coral reef, so to speak. You couldn't surf the internet and get in trouble. I didn't go outside and hear bad language. So I remember one day my son, Gaurashakti, he was like six, and he came home and he was just crying his eyes out. I said, Gaur, what is it? He said, the boys call me the worst imaginable name, Peter, you can imagine. I said, I think, oh my God, they're learning bad language. I said, what do they call you? They call me a she-ass donkey. Those kids, they didn't know anything. I remember one time we had a little lesson about the four regulative principles. And I was actually asked to speak, and they're just children, so you have to, you know, can't speak directly. I tried to help them understand what was meat eating, what was intoxication, what was illicit sex, and what was gambling. It's just big eyes looking very innocently, you know. So then, about a month later, I took some of the children to a preaching program in a big town called Tours. It had about 100,000 people. And there was a family, you know, they were curious. They weren't at all devotees, but they had us over. And I remember one little girl, she wandered into the kitchen and opened up the refrigerator. And there was a big piece of red meat there. And she looked at me and she said, Maharaj, look, illicit sex. So, a word is a word, anyway. But here, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, he's choosing his words very carefully. Actually, someone who is sitting on the asana, someone who is sitting on the vyasasana, he's responsible to repeat the philosophy verbatim. No need to add or subtract because it's complete and perfect, because it emanates from the mouth of God. Prabhupada said this was my only qualification. I didn't add anything, I didn't subtract anything. The message is perfect and complete. So we have to choose our words carefully, meaning that we have to speak according to the authority of Shastra. And Shukadeva Goswami, who's our spiritual master, he's speaking authoritatively. He's saying here, some people are like shva, like dogs, some are like vitvaraha. They're acting like village hogs, or ushta, the camel, or karai. Even by Western standards, this is a very, this is an insult. Most people consider themselves ladies and gentlemen, but these words are no exaggeration. In Vedic culture, a living entity is classified by his consciousness, not necessarily by his body. If a living entity is in the body of a human, but he's acting like an animal, then he's classified as an animal, as in this verse today. And conversely, if an animal's consciousness is higher than a human being's, then he's considered superior to the human species. For example, Hanuman, Jatayu, Garuda, etc., they're so-called animal forms, but they're actually higher forms. They have higher consciousness, so they're not classified even as human beings. They're classified like in the realm of demigods. So my point is, the classification is by consciousness. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami refuses to acknowledge that just because someone has taken birth in human society, that he's necessarily a human being, because his consciousness is otherwise. He calls some of them shvas, dogs. How can he dare call some people dogs? Well, Prabhupada clarifies it for us. He says that although dogs are very faithful servants of their masters, they nevertheless remain in a miserable condition. This is another analogy Prabhupada gave in the tape. Dogs are sometimes very faithful, but still you keep them outside. At least Brahmins, Suchinam, who are very clean, they'll never let dog or cat into the house. Because even if you sweep up after them, or no, it's just the, not only the hairs and this and that, but the consciousness is not pure. It's not meant to be in the house, which is meant to be like Vaikuntha, in the sense that the deity resides there, and it's his home. So a dog very faithfully serves his master, but he may get some scraps of food, and he may get a little doggy house outside, but you know, his condition's still pretty miserable. So in the material society, people serve their masters. Society, friendship, and love, as Rupa Goswami so eloquently puts it. Their families, their bosses, their country, they serve very faithfully. But nevertheless, they remain in a very miserable condition. They remain in this material world. Even if you get promoted, you still have to deal with birth, disease, old age, and death. You're still in a miserable condition. Whereas if you're the servant of a Vaishnava, Chariya Vaishnava Sheva, Narottam says, who's ever been delivered without the mercy of a Vaishnava? If you serve a Vaishnava, then your life becomes very fortunate. Very fortunate if you serve a Vaishnava. It's like Prabhupada was walking with his disciples one day on the beach in Bombay, and there were different dogs on the beach, like you see in India, so many dogs here and there. And there were some very miserable looking dogs, you know, that some of their hair was missing, and they had, you know, scars all over them, and half an ear here from dog fights, and rummaging through the garbage. And then there was another dog. He was being, he was on a leash, and his master was taking him on a leash, and he was big and kind of fatty and all fluffy, and kind of even had a smile, I guess. Can imagine. At least he was wagging his tail. And Prabhupada said, what is the difference between those dogs? The ones in the garbage and the one with that man. And the devotees didn't catch it. Prabhupada said, you see, one has a master, and he's doing very nicely. And the others have no master, so that they're at the mercy of the material energy. So it's different. It's like Bhurijan Prabhu said. He wrote a very beautiful book about Prabhupada and how he was the humble servant of Prabhupada. He said, my glorious master. Because a spiritual master, Vaishnava, he'll never exploit you. He'll give you everything that he has. This is Guru. Guru is meant to share everything with his disciples, dependent upon their surrender. If they're fully surrendered, he will share with them the most confidential secrets of Sri Vrindavan Dham. But to be the servant of someone in this world, never very nice, actually. Therefore, when people, we go out and we preach, you should be servants of God. Oh, come on, man. I've had enough service. I don't want to, especially God. They don't know how sweet it is. They don't know what is the shelter. Prabhupada was walking on the beach one day, and all the crabs went sideways into the ocean. And Prabhupada said, why did they go like that? Another question. And, you know, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. Well, Prabhupada, we put a certain amount of velocity on the sand, and the energy ran through and hit the sea fibers and the brains of the crabs, and it told them to go left. And Prabhupada's like, what? Prabhupada said, no, the ocean is very large and they're very small. They know they can take shelter there and not be in danger. Said, just like us, we are very small, but God is very great. This world is very dangerous. So we should take shelter of God by chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Most people are not so fortunate to know this. So we have to tell them, no, we have glorious Master. We have Śrīla Prabhupāda. And you can take shelter of his lotus feet. Then he compares some men to hogs. Ooh. A hog will eat anything and everything. But there's no discretion, no discrimination. Those of you who have been to India, I don't have to elaborate. It's really, well, the first time I went to India, I went, wow, the Bhagavatam's true. That was my level of realization. Not because I saw Krishna, but I saw the hogs. And they're in the gutters, like, you know, the open sewers of Vrindavan, unfortunately. And they're just like there, and they're rolling, and the mud is there. Anything that floats along, you just open their mouth, and it flows in, and they... And they actually do have a smile on their face, don't they? The pigs have a smile on their face. And they're so happy in that situation. You know, we need to say no more. But... So Prabhupada compares modern man to that. Now, oh, wait a minute, sir. Hey, Swami, when I was giving a class at university, one student stood up. He said, wait a minute now, this analogy is going too far. But actually, we eat, Prabhupada said, unmentionable foodstuffs. We put meat. What is meat? It's a corpse. Sorry. That's no, you don't have to worry. But it's a corpse. What a dead body is technically, and technical jargon, scientific, medical language, a dead body's corpse. And it's supposed to go to the morgue. You've gone to the morgue, the butcher's shop, where there's all the corpses assembled, and you've bought one corpse, and you're very proud. You're cooking it, I think, eating. What did George Bernard Shaw say? You are what you eat. No wonder they have zombie-like consciousness, eating all these corpses. So, of course, the student didn't accept that. He walked out. Like that. Or liquor. What is liquor? You know, liquor is really an acquired taste. People, the first time they drink liquor or they smoke a cigarette, it's a disgusting, you know. You're coughing, you're spitting it out, but your friends are there. Hey, man, come on, be a man. You know, take another slug. You know, you take a big slug and you go unconscious, and then everything's tikacha. But like this, and you acquire it, and you always say, oh yes, this wine tastes very nice, but you always know it tastes horrible. And what I saw in China, oh my God. Gaurai was there, we were in Hong Kong, we were chanting down by the restaurants. So in Hong Kong, you don't like go inside and take a menu, and everything's listed. You before you go in, they have these huge aquariums with every imaginable fish from the bottom of the ocean. And Prabhupada pointed out that fishes are lower than plants. Did you know that on the evolutionary scale? They're lower than the plants. You look at that diagram they have somewhere in the Bhagavatam. The fish are lower because fish eat anything that falls into the ocean. All kinds of unmentionable stuff. Garbage. They eat garbage. Like catfish. They eat garbage. So there's all these fish. And there's eels, like squiggly little slimy eels, skinny ones, big fat ones, they're all about this fat and this long. And they have like these two little eyes, you know, and they're just disgusting. And there's crawfish and there's crabs and they pile them all on top of each other and there's all snakes. There's snakes there, and you can pick a snake, a boa constrictor, you know. So we were having Harinam, and I was thinking, this is beautiful, I thought at first. This is great, man. You're wide. They can sit outside and, you know, look at the fish. I thought, Jesus, it's pretty crowded in there. The fish could hardly move. They have huge tanks. It's like from one end of this room to the other, tall as the ceiling. And all of a sudden I realized people were coming, and they were pointing to a fish, and one guy was taking a pole and stabbing the fish, or just picking him out and taking him, and then, you know, 50 minutes later into the kirtan, there's the poor fish on somebody's plate in front of me. And then when I saw a family of, you know, a large family, the parents and the kids, and there must have been the uncles, and everybody came, it was 6, 10, 12. They just came and they picked one huge fish. He said, I want that one. I said, Harinam, we're getting the Harinam out of here. It's true, right? I'm not exaggerating. Have you been to Hong Kong? So there's a saying that a Chinaman will eat anything that flies in the sky except an airplane, that runs on land except a car, and that moves in water except a boat. And I thought, that's unfair, but no, Babus, it's the absolute truth. Well, let's say it's the relative truth. They'll eat anything. And my dear godbrother, Tamal Krishna Goswami, one time he went to deep into China. And, you know, he was really austere, because, like, what's left to eat? So he went to one restaurant, because they had to eat like that so as not to be conspicuous, you know, by not being present in society. So he told the waiter, now look, I'm vegetarian. And the waiter went, what that? What that? He said, I don't eat meat, I don't eat fish, and I don't eat eggs. You got it? Yes, I got it. Let it dead in. You no eat anything. So he said, no, you go try to find me something. I find you something, sir. And he came back with this big cake, big fluffy cake, you know, like just the flour was just, you know, like you get in America, not like we get in Russia. They called them torts. I don't know why in the world they call it a cake, but it's a Russian tort. I can't even describe it. I mean, it's vegetarian, but it's not like America. You know, who do we have? Betty Crocker. Yeah, leave out the eggs. Betty Crocker, and you know, I've been on a fast for 25 days, so I'm getting to that. And they have the cream there, and everything. And so they brought this, like, Betty Crocker cake out. And Maharaj, he just, you know, he just took his fork like that, and it cut right in there very nice, and that flour and the cake, and he's just about to put it in his mouth. He said, you're sure it's vegetarian? Oh, vegetarian, so vegetarian. What is it actually made of? Oh, so many kinds of insects. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj dropped the spoon. He said, I told you vegetarian. So you said no meat, no fish, no eggs. You didn't say no insects. We also have cockroach stew. That's a great verse you picked tonight. So we laugh, of course, but in Vedic culture, the eating of the cow flesh is considered the most degraded thing. And this is Western culture. So this is cows like our mother. So Prabhupada's grace, Lord Chaitanya's grace, is that he has freed us from all this horrific thing. So next comparison is that to of a camel who eats thorns. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport later on, because I didn't read the whole purport because of time, but he compares eating of thorns to illicit sex life. Like the camel, he gives the example of the camel. Well, Shukadeva gives the example of the camel. The camel goes and he when he's in like a desert area, there's not so much food, he'll chew the branches and sometimes he'll chew on the thorns. And because his brain is very small, he's thinking it's tasting very nice. He's actually tasting his own blood. So he's thinking this tastes very nice. So in the same way, when we engage in illicit sex life, it's like tasting our own blood. We're using our valuable energy, which could be used in the process of Krishna consciousness for activity which is reserved wholly and solely for procreation. Krishna says in Gita, I am that sex life which is not contrary to religious principles. I am that, because what is produced of such union between man and woman? Very nice children, saintly children, not Vanashankara who are simply a burden to the world, but beautiful, saintly children who are a source of auspiciousness for society. So because of uncontrolled sex desire, people are suffering unwanted children, there's disease, even death, there's AIDS. But actually, it's more than just the union between man and woman. Prabhupada says sex desire means profit, adoration, and distinction. Profit means that to enjoy the opposite sex, she's not going to be attracted to like some poor guy who's dressed in, you know, bad clothes. You've got to work. You have to be dressed nicely. You have to have a nice car. You have to have a house. This is all called the profit and the girl herself. There's a whole culture around that. Adoration, so much energy goes into attracting the opposite sex and distinction. You need a name for yourself, like this. This is how Prabhupada, a lot of energy. Therefore, the prostitute Chintamani said to Bivamangal Thakur, he was a brahmana, but he'd gone astray, he'd lost his way, he'd become confused, and he was visiting regularly one prostitute called Chintamani. And you know the story how one evening during a Hurricane Katrina, he tried to go to her house, and he really risked his life in going there through the storm, through the jungle. He was crossing the river on the back of an alligator. He thought it was a log. Then he got to her house, the high walls. He grabbed onto a vine to crawl over, and when got on the other side, he realized it was a cobra, let go of it and ran. And he got to her door, soaking wet, bruised, cut, coughing. And she said, Bivamangal, if you went to as much trouble to become Krishna conscious as you are to enjoy your senses with me, you would already be a saintly person. And somehow it just clicked. And he just turned around, he said, thank you, Mata. And he walked to Vrindavan, become a great saintly person. He lived there 800 years. He later wrote a very beautiful poem, Krishna Karnamrit, which he mentions Chintamani, and he offers his respects to her because she was the one who directed him on the path of spiritual life. He also says that his spiritual master, Somagiri, spoke through the mouth of the prostitute. He was not alive. His spiritual master had left this place. He'd gone to Vaikunth. But through the mouth of the prostitute, his guru had spoken to him like that. So if a man can, or a woman for that matter, can maintain celibacy, save and except for procreation, the result is very good health. Very good health. That energy is, the body naturally absorbs that energy and uses it for good health and clarity of mind and very sharp intelligence. Very, very sharp. Those benefits are much more than just this frivolous activity of here or there and having sex like cats and, you know, cheap thrills. If you're healthy, geez, what can be better than health? Health is, nowadays people really value their health. And if you have clear mind and you chant your japa and your mind stays fixed on the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, wouldn't that be nice? Your mind doesn't wander. And intelligence? Intelligence like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He could remember anything he read from the age of 7 onwards. Any little pamphlet, any book, verbatim, he could, you just quote the page number, the paragraph, the sentence, he could remember. Naishtiki Brahmachari. Actually, I met one time a Naishtiki. I mean, a genuine Naishtiki Brahmachari. I was doing Radhakund Parikrama. And I was going around, I had some disciples, you know, and I was saying, here, this happened here, and that happened here. And then just because I was so absorbed in the description of the Dhamma, I was a little uncareful, I didn't notice one sadhu passing by, and I bumped into him, and he kind of fell over. You know what he did? He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, have I hurt you?" And he paid dandabats to me. Oh my God. He's a sadhu. He's bhava. I was at fault. I hadn't knocked him over. But he was so humble, he paid obeisances to me. So Govinda Maharaj said, because I was like shocked, Govinda Maharaj, "You better get down, Maharaj. You better get down and pay your obeisances. That's sadhu." So we're like, he's like this and I'm like that, you know. And I said my prayers and I got up. He's still saying prayers. And he's repeating the 10 offenses to the holy name and the Vaishnava Aparada. Govinda Maharaj says, "Get back down." He like, 10 minutes, he's up saying, because he felt that he offended me. That, "Oh, I'm sorry," he said, "I got in your way." Like, he got up. He was dressed in rags. You know how they do the out there, some of the babas, they just have the, it's gray, because they just wash it in the river, and you know, it may have been white at one time. All he had was a loincloth and a Brahmin's thread. But so beautiful face. He was old man, maybe in his 80s or maybe 90s. But when he looked at me, I was like, "Oh my God, he looks so beautiful." So I said, "Oh, Baba, I was at fault." "No, no," he said. And then we're speaking, and then he said something. He quoted a verse very nicely. So Maharaj, you chanted that verse so nicely. So he had one assistant. His assistant said, "Hoish Naishdiki, whole life Naishdiki. He knows all the shlokas." "He knows all the shlokas," I said. "Do you know Bhagavad Gita?" Suddenly, like the wind. Dharmic shakti, kuduk shakti, na na na. And he went on like 10 minutes. He completed like four, five, six chapters or whatever. I said, "Stop, okay. And then his servant said, "He's very learned, Babaji." He said, "Babaji Maharaj, sixth canto, chapter six, Srimad Bhagavatam." Like that. And we're standing there, and he's just going, and that's very humbly, he's chanting like that. And then he said, "Ask any verse, he'll say." So I said, something from Ramananda Roy. The whole pastime, everyone, the glories of Haridas Roy, going on and on and on and on and on and on. He said he'd memorized most of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a good part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, half the part, just the writ to memory. I couldn't believe it. And it's just the humble, his nice shtiki. I said, "Well, you've always been a Baba?" He said, "No." He was the Supreme Court judge in India for 43 years. But he never married. And every day he read Shastra. So, this is the value of celibacy. They look down, "Oh, you Hare Krishnas, you're Victorian. You don't know what you're missing." Hey, Baba, you don't know what you're missing. You don't have the brain to understand it. Yes, so... Of course, one time someone said to Srila Prabhupada, a disciple, "Prabhupada, if there's no more sex life, there'll be no more human beings." Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's the point." So next, Sukhdeva Goswami, he compares some materialistic people to asses. And he says, the ass carries a very heavy workload day and night, and he receives just a little grass from the master. So similarly, people work very hard day and night, but really, as you know, in our society now, they just make enough to make the ends meet. But you can say, "No, Maharaj, they're making more than the ends meet. Look at the houses they live in, look at the furniture, look at the cars, look at the house in the country, but you know, it's all on loan. It's not that they've really bought it, it's all that little plastic credit card." And, you know, they're just making enough to make ends meet, and they're, you know, spending on their credit cards and taking loans that they pay for the rest of their life. That's not making ends meet. That's a very artificial economy. Very artificial economy. And it will crumble down. It's just about 14 days away. And even if they do have something more than the others, like Bill Gates, you know, after the government taxes you practically to death, you know, if you're one of the top 2%, you have to sweat and worry that someone's going to come and steal it. And you have to have a big fence, you have to have a big bull pit, pit bull, pit bull. If they lock on to you, you have to go to a dentist because he's the only one who can extract the teeth of the dog. There's no way they can get... And you have to have a pit bull, and you have to have an alarm system, and you have to, like, keep a gun in your house. And even then, they break in and steal. You see? So, like the ass, he works very hard, but he just gets a little sustenance to enjoy. They work hard, and how many days of the week do they get to... They work 5 days. People work 6 days. They got 1 day off. And what do? They're so exhausted, they sleep. This is life. As Prabhupada said in his Vyasa Puja, struggle for existence, the human race. Only hope, your divine grace. Simple living with high thinking. So, in conclusion, Shukadev Goswami is speaking strongly, but not to condemn, but it's more like you go to the doctor. And when you go to the doctor, you don't go to a doctor just to say hello. Okay, hello, that'll be $10. I just said hello, it's a $10 hello. You go to the doctor because you don't feel good, and you expect that he's going to tell you something a little painful, right? But you'll be grateful. So we should be grateful that Shukadev Goswami is pointing out what the problem is. We shouldn't have a false ego. Hey, who are you speaking? He says, thank you, sir. Yes. Under the influence of this age, by bad association, I have been forced to act in such abominable ways. Would you please, Kayami, tell me who I really am and what is the process for achieving that liberated state? Like Sanatana Goswami when he first met Lord Chaitanya. He said, Lord Kayami, who am I? So we should be willing to take the sauce, so to speak, as we say in Krishna conscious lingo. Especially if the doctor is so qualified, he can give us the proper medicine. Doctor gives you... This is the nice thing about a doctor. It's not a hopeless. You've got this problem. Oh, here's the medicine. Take it dutifully for 9 or 10 days. Problem will go away. And you can't compromise. Couple years ago, I had a very bad infection in my gums. And doctor said, okay, these are very strong antibiotics. You take 2 a day for 15 days. And if it starts to get better, you have to still take it. It's just the symptoms that are going away. So, of course, I took him for 5 days and the symptoms went away. I threw the pack away. And then, boy, did that infection come back with a vengeance. And then I had to get cut, and the stitches and the whole thing like that. So, the doctor will point it out, then he'll give you the medicine. So the same principle holds true in Krishna consciousness. We have the disease of material existence, and we have the medicine. Enachi ashodi maya, nashi bharo lagi, hari nama mahamantra, lao tumi magi. Mahaprabhu says, I have brought the medicine that will wipe out the disease of illusion from which you are suffering. So it's a very strong medicine. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Because of these animalistic propensities within us. We're not just talking about them, Prabhus, we're also talking about ourselves because we haven't completely let go of this conditioned nature. We're Karma Mishra Bhaktas. We're like the demigods. We're devotees, but we have the best of both worlds, or we have the best of one world, and we think we have the best of this world. That's the illusion. But we're holding on to these attachments, so this is our animalistic existence. So sometimes, unfortunately, in this modern society, when they have a medicine, they test it out on animals. We don't support that. I'm just saying what they do. Some shops, like the Body Shop, they became very popular. That woman who started that, she just passed away recently, or a year or two ago. Body Shop, they're very popular because on all their facial lotions and their body lotions and their soaps, it says, not tested on animals. Oh, I buy that. I like that better. But they do it. They want to prove that it really works. So Lord Chaitanya, he did the same thing. He tested this mantra on animals. Yes, he went to the Jarikanda forest, and as he was chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. What happened? Because he was chanting, and Prabhupada said this Maha Mantra is very powerful, but it should especially be heard from the lips of a pure devotee. Then it has a miraculous effect. This is why, although we have many bhajans and they're very nice, we should always be playing Prabhupada bhajans too. Because they're very, very potent, very purifying. So he took that mantra through Jharikhanda forest, and what happened? Tigers were getting up and chanting, and deer were chanting, and pythons were chanting, and little soft bunny rabbits were chanting, and squirrels and alligators. Oh my God, you'll relate to this. The alligators were also chanting. Not only that, because of the chanting, they gave up their lower nature, their envious spirit. Their quality is envy. So, and they chant it, and you can see the tiger kissing the deer. So cute. I love that. We say in French, mignon. C'est très mignon pour vous. Voilà, c'est mignon. It's a good word, cute. C'est mignon. So you see that in the picture in the CC, right? There's the tiger and there's the deer and they're kissing and they're chanting, you know? Something like the Jehovah Witnesses. Picture of heaven or something. They got it from us. But Prabhupada said, give up. So man also, he has very envious nature. This is the cardinal sin, as our Christian brothers say. The cardinal sin is that we became envious of God. All the emotions that we experience in this world are also in the spiritual world, except for one, envy. Envy is the sin which caused us, you know, to fall. Envy of God, wanting to be like God, be the big fish. When you chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The envy goes away. And rather than envying someone, you want to serve them so that you can imbibe their good qualities. So he demonstrated, and so if it's possible for animals of very low birth to become Krishna conscious by the power of the Maha Mantra, what to speak of the two-legged animal, like the, as Shukadev said, Mr. Dog, Mr. Hog, Mr. Camel, Mr. Ass, okay. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, if you chant this mantra, just like the animals in the Jharikhanda forest, you can become freed of that conditioned stage and become a Pakka Brahman Vaishnava. Just like Prabhupada said. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, so many of my disciples were very haggard looking, tired, unhappy, sad, dirty, melancholy, the word. And now they have come to Krishna consciousness. And they're very jolly. He said they look just like they've come from Vaikuntha. They have the saffron robes and the shaved heads and the little gleam in their eye and the smile because they're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So if there's a very, very severe disease and someone finds the cure, let's say they're trying to find a cure for cancer now. Let's say that one day one doctor just gets up, I got it. He's in the shower, right? That's where they find all them. But I like, wow, I didn't think of that before. It's so simple. You just take 3 grains of sugar, mix them with a little chocolate, put in this little chemical, and then he becomes famous. Cancer's cured, this cancer, that cancer, and even if you're at your last stage, if you take the pill, you completely get better. Wow. He'll become famous. And the medicine will also become famous. If someone finds a cure for, you know, I don't know what, some kind of infection you get on your hand here, you know, who's going to notice? But if you find a cure for cancer, AIDS. So what's the greatest disease in this world? The greatest disease in this world is forgetfulness of Vasudeva Krishna. Because disease means you suffer. It's a symptom of disease is you suffer. So it's the greatest disease because by forgetting God, you don't only suffer in this lifetime, you suffer birth after birth after birth after birth after birth because of ignorance of God and His laws, His religion. You commit so many stupid, abominable, sinful activities. Eating big fish from a tank. I want that one. Next lifetime, you'll be in the tub and he'll pick you. This is their mantra in India. You can eat meat, but you go to the goat at midnight, dark moon, you take the knife, and you, before you cut the throat of the goat because you want to eat the meat, you say, "Mr. Goat, I don't have the Sanskrit. I am taking your life now. In the next lifetime, you have my permission to take my life." That's the mantra you have to say. So after a while, you think, this isn't a very good mantra. So, the greater the disease, the more famous. So the greatest disease, forgetfulness of God, which is the source of all suffering, someone came for a cure. And one day, people are going to realize who that person is and what that cure is. And they're going to become famous all over the world. And he already said it's going to happen. Lord Chaitanya said, "One day, my name will be heard in every town and village of the world. Everyone will know, and so many people will be chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." So we're kind of like the first ones. You know, we kind of got, I don't know how that all happened, but we kind of somehow stumbled across this great movement of mercy. And of course, it's not automatic. You get the mantra. You have to, as we said today, you have to utilize that mercy very properly. Just like a gardener, some people have the green thumb. Some people can't, plant a potato for a kartal. I mean, they put something in the ground, it just doesn't grow. Some people have the green thumb. So it's a science, Krishna consciousness. You're a gardener. You have to put the seed in, and attentive to cultivate it very nicely, that it becomes a mature plant. The seed is there already in the heart, the Bhakti Lata Beach, and Prabhupada has given us the watering process. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Because the source of all good fortune, that medicine's a cure-all. We call that in English, I'm speaking in English. This is the result of spending most of my life overseas. You know. We say in America, "Hello, Maharaj, you are in America." Well, they speak Spanish more here than anything else. We call that panacea, right? Panacea means the cure-all, the panacea. So chanting Hare Krishna is the panacea. So, but you have to hear it, right? You have to hear about the glories of the holy name enough to really believe it. That's the point. Because like right now, we don't really understand the potency of these holy names. And Mahaprabhu pointed that out. "Oh my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benedictions upon the living entities. Thus you have hundreds of millions of names like Krishna and Govinda, etc. You've invested all your transcendental energies in the sound of your holy name. You've made approach to you so easy." How does he conclude? "Unfortunately, I have very little attraction." Like a little girl who finds her mother's diamond ring. We were on the plane yesterday, because I have my deities, and I like to decorate them, real jewels. And we were sitting next to this lady, and she kind of fell asleep, put her hand out. Oh my God, that ring! And she had diamond ring. She was very wealthy. Well, she had the diamond ring. My God, it was like that, huge, and it was surrounded by diamonds, and then emeralds, and more diamonds. I was just drooling. The Sringadev would love that. Not for me. What am I going to do with it? My deities, right? This is how we just love to go shopping, don't we? For our deities. I love to go deity shopping. And then just Krishna looks so cool in those sapphire. "Come on, child, look at my deities. You come look at my deities. Look at my deities." So nice to dress Krishna. It's all his anyway. So, but what if a little girl finds that ring? She's just, the ring, mommy takes it off, and she's got a 3-year-old child, and wanders into the bathroom, and she finds the ring, and she thinks it's a little piece of glass. She tries, kids, I put it in her mouth, swallows it, doesn't tell mommy. What's the fate of that ring? So because she didn't appreciate it, she couldn't take full advantage of it. So Mahaprabhu said, that's our problem. We have this glorious holy name. Anyway, there's so many verses, Prabhupada said. So we don't have that appreciation for that the holy name is non-different than Krishna. So we treat it like that. Like, you know, the little girl may treat it casually. It's something very nice. So regularly, these type of classes where at least 40% of the class is about the holy name. This helps us. So next time we sit down, we'll sit very properly with fixed attention and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By regular attendance in the Bhagavatam class and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart of the candidate becomes destroyed almost anew. And thus one becomes established in irrevocable devotional service. So just hearing like this, we gain the adhikari. You could say piety is one way, like supreme piety, devotional piety, agyat sukriti. We get the piety. Just by hearing, there's a nice pastime in the Gita Mahatmya about the benefits of hearing like we're doing this afternoon to appreciate our good fortune and take full advantage of our chanting. There's the story of Susharma. He was a Brahmin boy. And like we hear sometimes in the scriptures, sometimes the Brahmanas, by bad association, they fall down. They become Dvijabhandhu, fallen Brahmanas. So this boy was Dvijabhandhu. He was born in a Pukka Brahmin family, and he practiced very seriously, but there was some asatsangatyaga. There's some, doesn't mention in the Gita Mahatmya, but you can imagine it was something like whatever. Later, he grew up a little bit and he was collecting leaves in the forest. He was bit by snake after all his nonsense and sins. He was bit by snake. He went to Yamaloka. And when you go to Yamaloka, one of Yamaraja's, his duties, his services, is to train you for your next body. Because it's very difficult to go from the human form of life into any lower species. You have to get used to it. Like again, like drinking wine. You gotta get used to it for a while, then, oh, this is very nice. So, by his karma, he was destined to become bull. He was Brahmana before, but because of deviating from Brahminical principles and doing nonsense, then he got lower birth of bull. So that bull took birth on the earth, and he was owned by a man who worked him very hard, because that was the karma that this Brahmana boy had accumulated. He worked, and that bull, that poor bull, the villagers were watching how this man was just beating that bull and making him work in the hot sun day and half the night. And one day, the bull died of exhaustion. And that man just disgusted, he walked away. But all, didn't die, but he was on the ground and he was breathing his last. The man walked away in disgust. This is a karma. But the villagers came around, and you know, because the bull is the emblem of religiosity, India is so nice like that. One man took pity. He said, if I've done any pious activities, I give them to this bull so that in his next life he'll have a good birth. People are like that in India. One time I was walking near the Krishna Balaram Mandir and I saw a crow, a little baby crow, and he was just getting his wings from, he just came from the nest, he was kind of cute, and he was flying, and he landed on a live wire. Like, you don't know what's, wires aren't live in India. you turn on the light in the bathroom. in India, right? So, and then I watched with my own eyes. It was just, he went, on the guy. He was like that. I just went, tough luck, buddy. You're a crow anyway. The sadhu came. And that sadhu, he was a Brajbasi. I don't know, he changed my life, that sadhu. He looked at that little bird with such compassion. He carefully, he picked him up like this and his went in, he sat down under the tree and started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. And I kind of walked over there and he said to me, Hi, Baba, Brajbasi. It's this Brajbasi. And I was thinking, oh my God, it's true. I'm so offensive. Because in the Dham, you're You're taught to see every living entity as Brajbasi, and you offer your respect even to the ant. It's no common thing to take birth in the Dham. I was born in San Francisco. That crow is more advanced than me. Sometimes if a sadhu is somewhat a little deviant, then his next birth, he takes birth as a monkey or a pig or something. Even he's Goswami, he works it out, the karma, then he goes to Golok. So you have to be very careful in the dance. This sadhu, I learned so much. Ah, Baba, Brajbasi, go get some milk. And all of a sudden, I was laughing at that little bird, I'm running around looking for some milk. Going shop to side. And you say, milk. Dude, ah, Babu, dude, quickly, dude. Like, you know, my grandmother's dying or something. Dude, Brajbasi, dude. Somebody gave me a little cup, you know, like, I don't have any money, I left my wallet, you know. Bunch of loopy, I don't have any money! Dude, Brajbasi, dying, quickly! All right, dude! They gave me, and I ran back, and they said, no, chapati. I had to go and beg a chapati. And I come back, and, Hare Krishna, Hare. So that sadhu, he took the chapati, and then he put the milk in there, and he took a little twig, and he took that bird, just pinched his beak like that, and he started force feeding him the milk and the soft dough like that. And after a while, after 10 or 15, I was like transfixed, thinking, oh my God, this is like a pastime or something. You know? So then, after a while, then 20 minutes, and then the bird slept. Shh! Brajbasi is sleeping. Go to sleep, my baby. I actually stayed there. I wanted to see what happened. And you know, like 20, 30 minutes later, the bird kind of woke up. And put some more, you know, and the bird's getting all restless. And then before my own eyes, that man just went like this. And that bird just flew so nicely. And he kind of went around like that, and then he landed on some tree. Back to his conditioned nature. But I was thinking, this is India. You never see something like that in the West. They go hunting and they bring down these, you know, deers. And I think, how horrible is the West? You know, Prabhupada said, although the elephant is very, you know, elephant is very valuable when she's alive, but she's so nice that she's even valuable when she's dead. You can use her skin, then you can take her skin and her tusks, and if she has pearl there, sometimes elephants said they grow pearls, so value you can take when she's... So he said, Vedic culture, for all practical purposes, it's dead in India. But still, it's even nice in its dead condition, because there's so much to be gained. And you see it in the hearts of the people, actually. Real religion is there in the hearts of the people, and therefore I don't think it will ever die. There'll always be sadhus by Krishna's grace. So I learned so much from that sadhu. That's typical. So this bull, he was dying, and the townspeople came. And one man said, If I have any pious credit to my name, I'm making a proclamation, I give it to this bull. Because he's the symbol of religiosity. People protect their bulls, they worship their bulls. So then another man, I also, in my lifetime I've done some very pious, I give it now all to this bull. Like this. So many people are coming. And then one prostitute came. And she said, well, can't remember doing anything pious. But if I did, I give it to the bull. Oh, everyone's, you know. Very nice. So then the bull died, and then he went to Yamaraj. And he came for judgment. And Yamar said, oh, he looked at the scribe, Chitragupta, what's the record of this living entity? So Chitragupta said, well, you know, I don't know, this has so much pious credits. Where he got it all, but he's got it. So Yamar says, so therefore, you do not have to go to hell. All that horrible burst that you were going to have before, that's all gone now. So that now you can take birth again as a human, but no more mistakes, okay? learn. So he took birth, and he remembered his life as the bull, and he wanted to go thank everyone for giving him the pious activity. Eventually he met the prostitute. Then he had one dream, and Yamaraj appeared to him in the dream and said, "Sir, who you should actually thank is not all those pious people. You have the prostitute to thank for your deliverance." He woke up and he went and found that prostitute. He said, "Ma'am, you're very old now, but I've taken birth again, and I've learned that because you bless me that I again got a human form of life." I said, "But you were a prostitute your whole life. How did you have any pious activity?" She said, "Yes, after blessing you, I was thinking about it." She said that she took him home, and there was one bird in the cage. And she said, "You know, this bird recites something every day. And by hearing what that bird is reciting, I felt myself become very purified." So then the bird started talking. Not duck, he's a bird. He said, "Yes, at one time I was a brahmana, a proud brahmana, and I took birth in this bird body, and I was born in the desert. But one very pious sage picked me up. He took me to his ashram, and every day he recited the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Every day. I was bird in cage, and he's... And one day, as the bird in that cage, I was stolen by one thief who sold me to the prostitute. So every day, I am singing as the bird that first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And by hearing it, she has gained so much Agyat Sukriti." That is where she got the Sukriti, the pious activity, to deliver you. Although she's prostitute, she acquired so much spiritual benefit by regularly hearing the Bhagavad Gita. And the Gita Mahatma goes on to say that they all stayed there, the bird, the prostitute, and the man, and they recited Bhagavad Gita, and that very lifetime they went back home, back to Godhead. So, of course, these are stories, these are pastimes, let us say, which are somewhat isolated. But the point is that whatever our condition, whether we come from whatever background that Sukadeva Goswami has said here, if we hear Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, we'll acquire the same benefit, and one day we'll also go back home, back to Godhead. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Thank you.